In 1949, Alfred Winslow Jones, a former socialist who had worked undercover against Nazis, created the first hedged fund with just $100,000. His improvised investment structure would spawn a financial revolution. By combining short selling with leverage and charging performance fees, Jones established a framework that would eventually produce fortunes that made J.P. Morgan look like a pauper. By 2006, the top hedge fund managers each earned over $1 billion annually, more money than God, as the saying goes. These modern financial alchemists live extravagantly with private islands and personal jets, but their greatest impact has been challenging academic orthodoxy about market efficiency while creating a powerful alternative to traditional banking structures. Jones's innovation was combining speculative means for conservative ends. By routinely shorting part of his portfolio as insurance against market risk, he could invest more aggressively in promising stocks. He meticulously tracked returns from stock selection, alpha, separately from market exposure, beta, anticipating academic breakthroughs in portfolio theory by years. His secretive approach established the culture of mystery that would define hedge funds for generations. Market turbulence between 1968-1970 decimated the first generation of hedge funds, with the largest losing two-thirds of their capital as hedging claims proved hollow. The 1973-74 crash eliminated most survivors, leaving only 68 funds by 1984. Michael Steinhardt thrived by properly hedging when others merely pretended to. During the 1973-74 crash, his fund gained 12% and 28%, while the S&P plunged 43%. His success bred resentment, with short selling portrayed as nearly treasonous, something Steinhardt later called the height of professional satisfaction. Steinhardt excelled at exploiting institutional trading inefficiencies by personally manning the trading desk. His gambling instincts and decision-making authority made him ideal for brokers needing quick responses, sometimes yielding extraordinary profits, like $500,000 in 8 minutes on Penn Central shares. Julian Robertson launched Tiger Management in 1980, inspired by A.W. Jones's model. Despite humble beginnings, Robertson maintained tight control while picking stocks long and short, dismissing market timing as gibberish. Between 1980-1998, Tiger earned an astounding 31.7% annually after fees, far outpacing the S&P 500's 12.7%. This success came through straightforward company analysis rather than complex strategies, with a simple approach. Manage aggressively, limit positions to 5% of capital, and persist through downturns. Nobel Prize-winning economist Paul Samuelson typically dismissed professional money managers, arguing random portfolios outperformed mutual funds. Yet he acknowledged rare investors with genuine insights could beat markets, though they'd form small partnerships to capture gains themselves. Helmut Weimar exemplified this exception with his PhD on cocoa markets. At Nabisco, he implemented his forecasting models and bought futures when prices fell below his predictions. When African crops eventually failed, prices doubled, yielding massive profits. Weimar then founded Commodities Corporation with Frank Vanerson, assembling econometricians to build sophisticated models. They discovered simple trend-following systems often outperformed complex fundamental models. Even Samuelson invested despite trend-following's limited academic standing. This scientific approach evolved into today's quantitative revolution, transforming simple econometric models into sophisticated algorithms detecting patterns invisible to human traders. George Soros arrived at the London School of Economics in 1949 after surviving Nazi occupation in Budapest. Karl Popper's teaching that humans can only approach truth through trial and error deeply influenced Soros, resonating with his experiences under dogmatic regimes. After early struggles, Soros launched a $4 million hedge fund in 1969. his reflexivity theory challenged efficient market orthodoxy by recognizing how investors' perceptions both misinterpret and alter market reality. By 1981, he had grown his capital to $381 million despite difficult market conditions. When major powers agreed to devalue the dollar in 1985, Soros recognized a self-reinforcing trend. Instead of taking his immediate $30 million profit, he increased his positions, yielding an extraordinary $230 million gain, 35% in just 4 months. The 1987 market crash, which saw corporate America's value fluctuate wildly in a single week, undermined efficient market theories while validating Soros' reflexivity concept and explaining hedge fund success. Renaissance Technologies, perhaps the most successful hedge fund ever, was founded by mathematician James Simons, whose Medallion Fund returned an astonishing 39% annually between 1989 and 2006. Simons combined mathematics, code breaking, and speculation to create an extraordinary money-making machine. Their breakthrough came from applying code-breaking algorithms to detect ghostly patterns in market data, faint signals hidden in statistical noise. In 1993, Simons recruited Peter Brown and Robert Mercer from IBM, who had revolutionized computerized translation through statistical methods. Renaissance's approach fundamentally differed from competitors. While others tested market theories against data, Renaissance fed data to computers first and let them discover patterns. Mercer maintained that some signals that make no intuitive sense do indeed work, and these non-intuitive signals often proved most profitable. The quant revolution represented a fundamental shift. Traditional investors relied on understanding companies and economies. Renaissance relied on pure mathematics. Their success demonstrated that markets contain patterns invisible to human traders but detectable by sophisticated algorithms. John Paulson executed perhaps the greatest trade in financial history during the 2007-2008 crisis. After growing his hedge fund from $2 million to $4 billion between 1994 and 2005, he hired Paolo Pellegrini, whose unconventional thinking proved crucial. Paulson identified mortgage securities as capitalism's weakest point and structured a trade with minimal downside and enormous upside. He recognized that mortgage bonds, particularly BBB tranches, offered exceptional asymmetry. A $1.4 million insurance premium could yield $100 million if the securities failed. Pellegrini discovered that even flat home prices would trigger widespread defaults. Their model showed a $600 million fund risking just $42 million could potentially earn $5.5 billion if mortgage bonds suffered an 80% default rate. When Wall Street created the ABX Subprime Mortgage Index in 2006, Paulson accumulated $7.2 billion in short positions. By February 2007, as mortgage lenders began failing, his fund gained 66% in a single month, and by summer, he was making $1 billion in a single day. Hedge funds' greatest virtue is being small enough to fail, unlike too-big-to-fail institutions that required $10 trillion in government assistance during the 2007-2009 crisis. When hedge funds collapse, taxpayers bear no cost. The financial system's paradox is that many institutions are too big to fail, yet bailouts encourage more risk-taking. The solution involves promoting institutions with strong risk control incentives. Thousands of hedge funds have closed without taxpayer bailouts, demonstrating this resilience. Despite significant fees, hedge funds outperform alternatives. A study of 8,400 hedge funds, 1995 to 2009, found they returned 7.7% after fees, including 3 percentage points of genuine alpha. This exceeds private equity performance, where venture capital generates 4 to 5% alpha, while buyout funds merely match the S&P 500 despite longer capital lockups. The hedge fund story exemplifies innovation and adaptation. From A.W. Jones's original strategy to Renaissance's mathematical models, these funds consistently find new ways to generate returns in supposedly efficient markets. Their success reveals markets as complex, adaptive systems where creativity and insight can triumph.